At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
And hello, everybody. Welcome to Post Wrestling's WWE Bash in Berlin review. My name is Wei Ting. I'm here live on our YouTube, youtube.com/postwrestling. It is minutes right after WWE's Bash in Berlin PLE event from Berlin. And joining me is, I guess, our European correspondent, you know, at least for this month, our man, your man, everybody's man, Neil Flanagan. Welcome, Neil.
Hello, Wei. Thanks for having me in John's absence. My knowledge of Germany and Berlin is not wonderful, so I'm not going to be able to decipher the chants in the way that I could with Clash at the Castle in Glasgow, but I'll do my best as European correspondent.
That is right. Well, if you aren't able to provide, I hope our chat room will be able to. So welcome everybody who might be watching us. Welcome everybody just jumping into the stream right now. We do these after every single WWE and AEW event live on our YouTube channel and many others in the Post Wrestling Cafe as well. So thank you for finding us. Thank you for joining us. We'll be going through every bit of this PLE. Neil, tell me maybe just in a few short sentences your thoughts of the build-up heading into tonight's PLE.
I thought it was pretty good for a five-match card, which is what we've come to expect from, you know, WWE PLEs that aren't SummerSlam or WrestleMania. I think they've got the opportunity across both TV shows to tell fairly compelling stories going in to these matches. We'll get to it with the opener, I guess. That's one where I felt the story was a little kind of out of character for Kevin, let's say, but we'll get into more detail on that. But I thought the build was pretty good.
Yeah, when you look at this card, I mean, for five matches, I guess you can only have so many contributions from either show, but in terms of interest, I felt it was a very raw, heavy leading card, you know, between, I would say, Drew versus Punk. You had, of course, Gunther versus Orton, and then the Terror Twins versus Liv Morgan and Dominic. I would say those three matches made up the bulk of the interest for me heading into the show. And that left SmackDown really just with Kevin Owens and Cody Rhodes and Alba Fire and Isla Dawn versus Jade and Bianca, which I mean, you can almost like at this point kind of claim it's across both shows. But yeah, even then, it's definitely like a far number five in terms of interest, right? So Raw, I really enjoyed heading into this PLE event. SmackDown, not as much. And maybe we'll discuss the results coming out of this. You know, at the end of this podcast, after our review, we'll be taking some calls from members of our Patreon as well. So you'll find that link in your show descriptions and emails and all that. And maybe we'll get some of your thoughts, both written and also via phones. So
Continue. Wait, you're looking very spiffy. You're looking very spiffy today.
Well, thank you.
If I do say so myself, and I'm wondering, was there any occasion earlier in the day that brought the button-down shirt and collar?
The occasion was my child's first dentist visit. So,
oh wow, okay.
Honestly, I just, you know, the weather just kind of called for maybe a collared shirt type of day. So, but thank you. Thank you for noticing.
You're looking good.
You're looking very fancy yourself too. See, I am not wearing my hat. Neil, not only is he wearing a hat, shout out Poison Rana, he also has a hat on in his background on the couch. What's up with that? Your couch is wearing
a hat. That's correct. This is the hat for Pollock and Thurston the other day. And I often don't wear this hat when I'm podcasting with you, Wei, because you have a very similar one.
I have the same hat. Okay, well, double you made up for I guess my lack of hat. But okay, we shall maybe discuss our fashion choices.
Sure.
a little bit later on. But we are here to talk about Bastion in Berlin. Let's just dive right into the review itself. Now, I think it's worth talking about because this is a very interesting WrestleTix statistic, I would say. WrestleTix sending out a tweet earlier today saying that, let me just pull it up here because I don't want to really, you know, mince any words because John Pollock or Brandon Thurston, I think, would kill me if I did. But very interestingly here, let me just share the screen for those of you that are watching right now. WrestleTix noted earlier today during the show that WWE Bash in Berlin held at the Uber Arena in Berlin, Germany, has an estimated 13,300 plus tickets distributed. Michael Cole announced an attendance of 13,149. So, I mean, I guess it has been recent trends where these exaggerated numbers aren't being so exaggerated anymore. Now, at least for this show, it appears the trend has gone the exact inverse way, where WWE, to the first time in my knowledge, has actually under-announced what might be an estimated number, at least according to, you know, our other barometers like a WrestleTix. So that was very interesting. We'll see if that gets updated at all.
I thought so too. And also, the Cole announced figure of 13,149. They lost five during the show. Toward the very end, getting close to the main event, he announced 13,144. I noted. So,
Interesting.
Five people must have walked out in disgust at the women's tag team result or something.
Okay, well, very accurate that they would account for those five. Maybe they were counting like the five members of the Judgment Day that were escorted out of the building after that
good
match.
Good call.
I don't know. But this was a very fascinating stat. Again, we'll see if we get an updated number either from WrestleTix or from WWE themselves a little bit later on. Did you watch any of the Countdown show, Neil?
I did. I had it sort of on in the background. I was doing a couple of other things, eating, for example, you know, because this was on, you know, 5 hours before, after, you were watching it. But I had it on and I found some of it reasonably standard fare, you know, they're running down the card, they have the panel. But the sit-down interview with Randy Orton, I thought, was fairly interesting, particularly the first part of it, which was in R1 of the Countdown show. That's the only thing I would point fans towards, in as much as they're never going to do a shoot-style interview, but he was really touching on things like the creative process being much smoother, which, you know, long-time fans and listeners will know is probably an allusion to the shows being changed up at very short notice by the former boss. He says the creative process is much better, much smoother. He's talking about the ability to take some time off. If there's a wedding, if there's a loved one, if there's something like that, it's less trouble to get a bit of time off. If you've been running very hard for a long time, they'll give you a bit longer off, and that's aside from injuries and so on. And they also touched on his change of attitude over the years. You know, they didn't really get into him, you know, dropping a number two in other people's bags.
No, that did not come up.
Oddly enough,
on this one,
that level of detail didn't come up. But they at least kind of acknowledged the fact that he's, you know, fans have seen him grow up.
I guess we have, yes. Yeah. Yes, the Randy Orton of old, but a distant memory, I would say. I found it interesting that they did bring up CM Punk returning on the same night as him. And they gave us, or Randy at least kind of gave us his experience of the event, being told by Triple H right before going out that Punk was about to come out, and gave an interesting answer in saying that in the moment, he said that it was a bit of a mind fuck having to essentially share that stage with Punk. You know, I'm assuming what he means is he's supposed to be the center of attention. He's the guy who's making the big return. And then here comes CM Punk basically kind of upstaging him. And he kind of noted like he didn't feel great about that. Again, his words were that it was a bit of a mind fuck at the time. But now that he's had time to process it, he's totally cool with it. Seems to indicate like a good relationship with CM Punk that I think we've seen video evidence of actually through like some online exclusive videos. They, you know, throughout the interview, as you noted, Neil, like they were using terms like pop and baby face. And you know, I'm sure for a lot of people it's still a bit of an awkward transition seeing WWE like freely, you know, use these sort of terms or speak, you know, have interviews where their talents are speaking out of character about things like this. But how do you feel about it? You know, like, because you know, we're talking about things like press conferences where they freely kind of, depending on the performer, go in and out of real life versus in character speak. And that was very much the same on this Countdown show through these various segments. How do you feel about it?
Yeah, I like it because it's kind of that dichotomy that all wrestling fans know. None of us are under the illusion anymore. I think even if he's still with us, the it's still real to me, guy. You know, we know what it is, and we want to willingly suspend our disbelief. But fans use this sort of terminology, like huge pop and all the rest of it, and
we use it, but we also aren't trying to speak into kayfabe in reaction to it. So now, what's kind of awkward is they go back to the panel, and it's like the Miz and Big E. They kind of have to speak as if like what they just saw was somehow like. You know, they have to all play the dance, and it's sort of like a modern thing, I suppose, in wrestling presentation where you have to kind of know how to dance in code between real and fake. I still think there are a lot of growing pains, you know, attached to it all, but I'm actually kind of like encouraged by the fact that they're willing to at least experiment, you know, and try this sort of thing.
I like it. They did a similar interview, and it was a two-part one with Seth. And I feel like it was sort of similar. You know, he got into the sort of Becky situation and so on, which is something that was interesting. This is going back a while, but on the last PLE, I think it was that SummerSlam, isn't it? There was a sit down with Punk, which was kind of nothingy. You know, I was monitoring it for the site. Will he say anything that's really worth even putting down here? And there wasn't. So, like you said, I think there's a level of experimentation going on.
Also, on the kickoff, we had what was promoted earlier as a sit-down interview between Cody Rhodes and Kevin Owens recorded earlier in the week. And this was the one where I might have been looking forward to the most just in terms of seeing whether or not there would be any sort of significant plot point, because I don't think we've had too many plot points, to be honest with you, in the build towards this match. And really, we didn't get anything here. You know, they talked about liking each other right away thanks to Owens' relationship with Dusty in NXT. Yeah. And Cody talked about Kevin being the one to introduce him to people on the indies, such as the Bucks, of course. And Owens repeats the story about just, you know, how he wished he could have earned the title shot here rather than being just handed to it, but also that he didn't want to see Reigns get it. Really just kind of a recap of the relationship and didn't really tell us anything new at all, I would say.
No, and this was pure kayfabe, of course, and it was, apart from a little bit of kneeling at each other, you know, to kind of make it more of a feud, there was very little here, and I agree with you, and like I alluded to at the beginning of the show, it's probably the worst built feud for this show.
I would say, other than Jane Bianca versus Donna, well, personally. All right. Well, we start things off here with Cody versus Kevin Owens on the show proper. What do you think about the placement of this particular match to kick off the show?
Interesting, you know, to have the undisputed WWE title, you know, opening the show. But as they often say, if you're not going to close the show, opening it is one of the better spots. I think nobody expected a title switch. Actually, no one expected a title switch of either of the world titles, but with this one in particular, perhaps that's figuring into the placement as well. I wasn't too shocked. I didn't think it would close the show. I felt that Gunther would get that spot. So, you know, where else do you put it? Directly before the main event? I think probably not.
Yeah, I would say there were no bad spots to be in on this particular card in front of this particular crowd. But sure. This, I think, might have been the most favorable one, you know, especially if you're a feud like this, which, again, to me has not been the hottest. Yeah. But, man, they came out here and just this crowd. I thought on SmackDown, they sounded really hot, but I wouldn't say like they necessarily rivaled, I think, some of the better like international crowds that we've seen. That completely changed for this particular show. Like, agreed. Berlin came out and they felt incredibly special. But from the moment this bell rang, like they were, like it was like 27 years of pent up frustration that they were able to just release, mm-hmm. you know, on this one match itself. And these two were the biggest beneficiaries of that. So
and we got our first live and loud decibel meter during Cody's mm-hmm. entrance. You know, it was, I don't know, 107 or something. It was loud.
107, yes. A huge sing-along to Cody's song. Incredible atmosphere. And they're really hammering home on commentary the fact that Owens hasn't won a singles title in 7 years. So that is, I guess, yet another plot point that's introduced late into all of this. So maybe the most notable chant we got all evening from this crowd was Auf die Fresse, and apologies for butchering it. Neil, what does Auf die Fresse mean?
You're going to have to tell me why. If they explained it on commentary, I missed the reference.
Cole explains that it basically means in your face.
Okay. I got the Welcome to Berlin translation, but not the in your face one.
Yeah, so one of several, I'm assuming, football chants that we heard throughout the evening, and this is the only one that I'm going to be able to translate because there are a bunch of other ones that sounded incredibly lively and I'm sure had a very deep meaning, but you know, that's what kind of makes these crowds special. The crowd is split right down the middle for both of these guys. We get a handshake to start, so things are starting off pretty slow and respectful. There are no signs of Cody's knee injury at the beginning of this match, as Owens was alluding to on SmackDown. Owens avoids a few Cody cutters. Cody avoids the stunner. Now they start shoving things a bit. Things are getting a bit more heated up as Cody takes control. He hits a disaster kick for a two count. The crowd, of course, starts doing, they do every count, every near fall in German. Mm-hmm. A Cody cutter gets a two count. Owens comes back with a neck breaker and then a rolling senton off the second rope for a two. Owens then goes for the stunner, but it's countered by the crossroads for a two count. At this point, the crowd is very hot. Owens delivers his second rope Fisherman Buster for two. We get a yay boo spot in the middle of the ring as Cody runs to the top rope for the Cody cutter. His knee collapses and he cannot finish it. So this is our first sign of the confirmation that Cody's knee is in fact injured. And Owens sees his target. He's about to kick Cody's knee from behind, but hesitates because he's internally struggling about whether or not he should be attacking his friend this way. Cody retreats to the floor. Owens asks Cody, why are you doing this? And Cody shakes off the injury and tells Owens that I'm okay. Mm-hmm. Cody punches back, and this prompts now Owens to kick the knee, which the crowd applauded really loudly. Owens is about to apron bomb Cody, but Owens cannot pull the trigger. He can't find his killer instinct. Mm-hmm. Back in the ring, Owens comes back, hits a stunner. We get a big kick out at two from Cody. Cody then hits several crossroads. Owens stops the last one and hits the stunner as the crowd totally bites on this near fall. They start chanting holy shit at a near fall, which I don't know if I've heard, you know, in other places. Owens hits a swanton that is stopped by Cody's knees. As Cody continues selling his knee, he hits the crossroads and he wins this match. 23 minutes and 16 seconds. Pretty lengthy matches on this particular show. Your thoughts on our first bout of the evening?
I thought technically this was a really good wrestling match, but my issue with it was with the character. For me, holes with Kevin Owens. Whether Kevin's a heel or a babyface, as he is at the moment, he is the prize fighter. That's his whole gimmick, you know. So he should want this belt, which he in the build to this, he's talked about, you know, it being so long since winning the the Universal title and that being tainted because of Triple H's involvement in it basically handing him the belt on that occasion. So I had issues with that, with KO's hesitation in attacking the knee and in hitting the pop-up powerbomb onto the apron. It just felt a bit out of character, and also kind of made Cody the you know, our top babyface, the liar. There was something wrong with his knee all along, you know. So
I took it more as a lie to be able to say, like, well, he's just kind of being tough, you know. He doesn't want this match canceled, right?
Yeah.
Rather than like anything dishonest.
He also said last night, you ask any of the trainers, you ask any of, you know, of the talent, there's nothing wrong with my knee, you know. So it's nitpick. It's probably a bit of nitpickery on my part, way, but not so much the Cody stuff, but I didn't really buy into the Kevin Owens character being so hesitant to hit the devastating moves.
Yeah, yeah. I would agree with that. In that, I don't think we've ever seen this sign of Owens maybe being this hesitant in the lead up to it. Now, what's different about this, of course, is the fact that he's he's Cody's friend, and I guess ever since Owens has been a babyface, he's not been somebody to turn on his friends, with the exception of Kofi, who didn't deserve it. But I guess it has been sort of like a character trait of his that's just kind of come up out of nowhere, and therefore, I don't know if the internal struggle in the lead up to the match was hitting his heart. Now, I will say, I think the moment that they did introduce the knee injury and like Owens having to struggle about whether or not to attack Cody, I thought the crowd connected really well to it. You know, honestly, they couldn't have asked for a better audience. And I think they actually did a really great job themselves of just, you know, conveying that little story, setting it up last night and then executing it tonight. So I think that deserves to be commended. I thought there were some amazing crowd reactions in this match, and it just amplified really the entire presentation a whole lot. So I don't think they could have asked for a better crowd. It was a strong match overall, in my opinion. Yeah. Well worked, greatly exceeding its build. And most interestingly, I think, I don't know about you, Neil, but in the moments after the match, I was fully expecting a heel turn from Kevin Owens, just because I had a sense that they were going to continue this program. But Owens, you know, he looks disappointed. He, they're kind of lingering in there as Cody is trying to tell Kevin, hey, it's okay. You did a great job. This was a good match. Owens eventually gets up. He hugs Kevin Owens. He lifts his arm up. And I you almost get the sense they're just kind of playing with that tension. Yeah. And then we fade to black. No turn whatsoever. Just what it amounted to pretty much a clean win from Cody as Owens accepts the loss. So what do you think was the thinking behind this? Do you think we get a continuation of this, or do we just move on to Solo Sikoa?
I really don't know. I think the likelihood is we move on, because, as you said, I got the impression too that they might go there, and then really the only physical sort of thing that happened was, instead of Cody holding Kevin's arm in the air, Kevin sort of then sort of switched it to hold up Cody's arm, and it was kind of okay, like they're best buds again, you know. So it feels like this has come to a conclusion.
Where do you think this leaves Kevin Owens?
I don't know. Onto something else, though, because, you know, Bad Blood is what, we've got a month or so. Is it right at the beginning of October? I forget, or right at the end of September.
Yeah.
And one would imagine, you know, that Cody's in all over the trailers for that, the sort of stakeout thing they've done. I don't see a build to this continue.
Cody and Metro Boomin versus Kevin Owens and Shania Twain.
Well, Kevin famously is a huge Shania mark, yes. So that could, I'd pay up for that.
Okay. Yeah, I do find it interesting that they would like introduce so much with Kevin Owens and then like not really take it so far, other than to kind of tease a Killer Instinct in this match and not deliver it. So I still think there's a lot more story to be told with Owens that I'm curious to see who they follow up with. If it's not Owens and Cody, maybe it's somebody else to bring it out of him. I also don't completely discount the idea that he could turn on Cody on TV, or maybe not turn at all. I mean, of course, there are these sort of like contract negotiation discussions that are going out there with Kevin Owens. So how much is the WWE invested in a significant Kevin Owens character change at this point, if he is close to a contract renegotiation? Not exactly sure. But that this was a bit of a surprising outcome to me. Not in that Cody won, but we didn't get the Owens turn. Let's go up next to Fire and Dawn versus Jade and Bianca. This is, of course, our tag team title challenge where Jade and Bianca lost these titles at Clash of the Castle. The last time you and I reviewed a WWE PLE together. Mm-hmm. So you're getting the full saga here, beginning and the end, Neil. The challengers come out first. Belair starts things off here. Dawn and Fire get the 2-on-1 distraction advantage. Jade is then taken out by a big Tope Suicida from Fire as the heels continue their 2-on-1 advantage on Belair. They're using Belair's hair against her. They're cutting her off from Jade in the corner. Fire impressively kicks Jade off the apron while executing a tornado DDT to continue separating Belair from her corner. Finally, Jade Cargill comes in with that hot tag, and I thought she did pretty well here, ending her run with a jackhammer to Dawn for two. Dawn and Fire hit their gory bomb and flatliner finish to Belair, but Jade comes in to break that up. Fire then goes for another step-up tornado DDT, but this time, the faces just stop her. They catch her, lift her up into a military truss, and drop her down. Dawn then holds onto Belair as Fire goes for a swanton. Belair moves out of the way at the very last second. Belair and Jade then are left alone with their opponent, and they hit their finish, a double team DDT into a wheelbarrow suplex, as Jade and Bianca win these championships back. 12 minutes and 2 seconds. Thoughts on the match, Neil?
I thought this was pretty good. It exceeded my expectations because, as you've said, you know, you and I have talked about these folks before. I really quite enjoyed the setup to the hot tag to Cargill. It was one of the better ones I've seen in a while. My attention goes onto Jade like a laser in these matches because she is still green and she is still developing. And I think this is one of her better outings so far in WWE. Unfortunately, you know, last time I think she had the slip on the rope and, you know, there was the phantom tap. There were a couple of things that went fairly badly wrong. But there was none of that. They gave her the stuff that she's comfortable with doing, the power spots, the splashes into the corner. Her selling is improving, I think, all the time, you know, from the sort of rather unconvincing shaking it off with the head. I thought this was pretty good for what it was. Fire and Dawn are very solid wrestlers, but they continue to like baffle me. I don't really know what they're meant to be. You know, the witchcraft / occult thing has just sort of morphed into sort of evil laughter, you know, after each sentence when they do a promo. They're not even really dressed in that kind of... we're about to kind of do a dark ceremony thing anymore. Mm. So this leaves them probably in a bit of trouble without the titles. But that's the history of these titles, unfortunately, for good or for ill.
Yeah. I would agree on Fire and Dawn. I mean, again, it's been discussed about like the circumstances surrounding their win. I think the win was, in my opinion, a good idea. Okay, it made for an incredible moment at Clash of the Castle, and I think that alone made it worth it. But I've been really disappointed at their follow-up for this team. Right. You know, they have not like been able to find, I think, interesting creative to make them feel special despite being champions. I would say they might have even, because they felt so unimportant, I think the championships felt also unimportant, and so this entire run might have damaged the titles just a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I think we can say the performers themselves haven't necessarily found their voice. They haven't been able to take that extra step up to, you know, really feel like they're worthy champions, even if they probably weren't ahead of this. So I think this one has been pretty disappointing for them. But in ring tonight, I thought they looked very good, you know, and maybe you can still look at this entire thing as a entire run as an overall net positive, because it did give them a little bit of notoriety. You know, people, I would at least say, might know their names now, which might be more than I can say about them before Clash at the Castle, at least.
Absolutely. I mean, even knowing which is probably a, you know, plus point.
Yeah, yeah, they've got a little thing going on with Blair of Davenport. I'd like to see that association continue, just kind of for all of their sakes. But they need to find still, you know, the thing that kind of makes their characters connect and a voice that works out for them, and they have not done that yet. It did make for, I think, you know, pretty significant or at least feel good title change here for Jade and Bianca. Now I agree with you about Jade's hot tag. They've had a lot of time to kind of work on this, you know, this format of Bianca basically doing the bulk of the match, hot tag to Jade. She's kind of got her thing down. She looked very good here, and now they can go over to Raw to have some fresher matches with some of the tag teams on that brand. Now we've already had like Shayna make mention of the Phantom Tap, so you kind of have a natural build to the Pure Fusion Collective match now. I'd love to see more trios matches. You know, I know that these are tag team titles, but I find like their trio with Naomi so much more engaging, and there's so many trios now in the women's division that I think those matches would be a lot more interesting. So
same here. I was always a big fan of the big three, and I thought, you know, that Mania entrance for the three of them, for example, you know, sold me on it if it wasn't already. And I like the three of them together, but yeah, they are tag titles, so we'll see. Mm-hmm.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, it's your chance to travel back to November 2004 as Wei Ting and I review WWE Raw, featuring Trish Stratus and Lita headlining the show. Bruce Lord and Karen Peterson are going to be covering New Japan's Destruction in Kobe event, and MCU Later tackles Agatha All Along. All of that, plus Rewind to SmackDown and Collision Course weekly, and ad-free versions of Rewind to Raw and Dynamite. $6 a month unlocks it all at postwrestlingcafe.com.
All right, up next we got a CM Punk versus Drew McIntyre here. We've got a strap match, and interestingly, some new presentation for a strap match here between Drew and CM Punk, where now we've got lights posted up on every corner in red and green lights. Now, this is the first time I've ever seen something like this for a strap match. What did you think of the idea?
I was a bit confused at the beginning by this. I felt a little bit overcomplicated. And it's not my favorite kind of strap match, the four corners gimmick, particularly when it has to be explained constantly that, you know, the competitor, if your competitor gets any offense in, then the lights all kind of reset. Mm-hmm. It just, that feels a bit clunky. But as it went along, I got more into it. I got more comfortable, I guess, with the stipulation.
Yeah. So I think, like, you know, for a lot of the people that might be listening to this right now, your immediate comparison points for something like this, in recent memory at least, is like AEW's versions of similar matches. We're talking either the sort of cowbell matches that we've seen, strap matches that we've seen, dog collar matches. Do those involve touching the corners? I don't remember.
I don't think so.
Maybe not that one. Okay. But Those, I guess, are just a bit more straightforward with emphasis on the actual sort of like strap itself. This one was more, I guess, based on the touching of the corners and the lights. I don't know. I'm still kind of torn because on the one hand, they look like so sort of like ridiculous, and they kind of stand out. I don't know. And to make the match look a little bit sillier, at the same time, I think they totally have a purpose and they fulfill like a need to make the match a little bit clearer, like the scoreboard a little bit clearer. So I'm a little torn by it. I'm curious to know what the audience thinks. So basically, as Neil mentioned,
I'm sorry, wait. I know you're in flow there. I think if you were in if you were there in person, these would be a great help, you know.
Yes.
As opposed to having an on TV counter for the number of corners that have been touched, and I didn't mind when all three of them, when Punk was getting his tap in unbeknownst,
right,
to Drew, when both lights came on, I thought that, oh, okay, yeah. But I get what you were saying there, but the presentation is sort of less serious with these big traffic lights in every corner, but.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So as Neil mentioned, this is a strap match where if you have to touch, okay, the rules stayed here right in the graphics. The only way to win is by touching all four corners of the ring uninterrupted in succession. So they made a big deal of alerting us the first time that this happened that you can, the lights will reset if your opponent manages like a bit of offense on you. So for instance, if you got two corners touch but your opponent punches you, then the lights have to reset. So I'm guessing that's taken from like traditional strap match rules too, but it's just something that I guess I've never necessarily internalized. So
same,
required a bit of explanation, and you know, we can assess about how clear and how effective everything was. So we got CM Punk versus Drew McIntyre here, strap match, traffic light match, whatever you want to call this. Drew touches the first corner and then Punk interrupts it by hitting the GTS. So this is where Cole says that, hey, the one of the corner lights is supposed to turn off and reset. So Punk, instead of touching the turnbuckle at this point, decides to start whipping and attacking Drew. Crowd is very engaged, as they are, you know, throughout the entire evening. They brawl onto the announce table where CM Punk regains control. Punk pulls the table from under the ring. Drew shoves it back in for some easy heel heat there. Drew grabs a chair, and at this point, CM Punk is bleeding on the outside. He gets back up and shows some blood on his forehead. Not sure how the blood managed to get there, but Drew did identify it, and he started attacking it, trying to open it up just a little bit more. It wasn't a huge, you know, amount of blood or anything, but was at least evident for a good portion of the match. Punk again sets up the table on the floor. He gets back into the ring and eats a claymore from Drew. Drew then touches the corners. He gets up to three, but Punk rolls to the floor and drags Drew into a chair that Drew himself set up in the corner. Drew then sends Punk through a table on the floor. Drew has Punk in a fireman's carry as he's touching the corners himself, but Punk is following him, unbeknownst to Drew, touching the corners right after him. And this is where we learn that both men can concurrently build a streak of touching corners at the same time, right? So simply touching a corner does not interrupt your opponent's corner touching. You can both build up to at least three yourself, and that's what happens here. All three of them have touched all three corners, and as they struggle for the sudden death corner touch, they fight over the fourth, and a punch is thrown, and at this punch, I guess it's all reset. So yeah, I didn't love all of this. I found all of that just a little bit awkward. But maybe that's just the problem with the actual stipulation itself.
I think so.
Yeah, they both deliver double boots to initiate a double down. And with the both of them lying down, Punk decides to use this moment to give us a Bret Hart tribute by giving his Bret Hart British Bulldog entry into the sharpshooter from both men lying down that we saw at the 92 Wembley match. Drew taps and gets to the ropes, but it's no use, of course. Punk lets go of the sharpshooter and begins to touch the corners, but Drew cuts him off with a neckbreaker. Drew then takes out the bracelet. He hits the claymore to Punk, Punk. He starts touching the corners and gets up to three, but Punk cuts him off again with a GTS. Punk hits another GTS. He touches the two corners, then stops to hit another GTS. He goes to touch a third corner and gives a big pause to the crowd as he decides to deliver one more GTS to an already lifeless Drew McIntyre. He then grabs the bracelet and finally touches the fourth turnbuckle to win this match in 19 minutes and 15 seconds. Your thoughts, Neil?
Yeah. The crowd seemed into it. Like, as you say, they were into everything, and the crowd elevated this show full stop. But the stipulation here and the amount of explanation needed for the lights and when and why the lights go on and off, I felt there was just a hint of silliness about that presentation that took away from what has been one of the best feuds, I think, you know, in either of the big promotions this year. So I wasn't completely satisfied by this stipulation, what this stipulation did to the feud. But the finish was good, you know.
Yeah, I too thought, I think the need to even explain about some of the specifics of the strap match took away from, I think, some of the immediate sort of like visceral violence that I think you might have anticipated from a match type like this. So I don't love this stipulation at all. Maybe there's a way to even simplify it that much further. But I kind of thought it was a little bit clunky, and maybe they, you know, if this is traditional rules that they're basing all of this on, they might have, we can maybe say they did their best at trying to convey what maybe initially are kind of awkward, you know, sort of rules attached to it all.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I tend to prefer, like, certainly the dog collar match, you know, maybe even a lot of Cody's like strap matches that we've seen. Those just in some ways felt a little bit more straightforward and maybe not as produced, not requiring as much production. In terms of like level of violence and aggression, I think they did a decent job of, like, you know, certainly delivering a lot more physicality than their SummerSlam match. By the end of this, I thought you got the sense that both men were completely exhausted from the battle, and that it was a hard-earned victory for CM Punk. So I thought it worked in that sense. Now, it was still a relatively safe match, you know, certainly by, like, modern standards, you know, but it still gave you that war-like, you know, exhaustive feeling, at least in comparison to, you know, their last match. In terms of story, CM Punk finally gets the bracelet back, so we could end that chapter. But does this end the feud? I mean, I think most are anticipating a SummerSlam, or sorry, Bad Blood rematch in the Hell in a Cell. What do you think, Neil?
I don't think it ends the feud, and I don't think it should end the feud. It wouldn't be a fitting end to it. And it's been such a good grudge between these two that I think, you know, this will continue. Drew isn't just going to walk away from it, you know, having been stopped from his big moments so many times in storyline by Punk. So I wouldn't think this is a fitting end to the feud. So no, I think it will continue.
Well, I mean, naturally they're one-on-one, so you would think a third match is in store. And I can't think of like a hotter program to put into a Hell in a Cell than this.
I think the
question is, like, what is the thing that they're going to do to build interest to put the feud into a Hell in a Cell now that the bracelet saga, quote unquote, mm-hmm. might be over. I guess Drew can always steal it back. But I would like to see them move away from the bracelet, as I think a lot of people would. And I would like to see him actually do something even more dastardly.
Yeah.
Maybe this is where we finally get an appearance from AJ Lee. Maybe Larry mm-hmm. makes an appearance somehow. You know, go right to the source. Forget the bracelet. Just, you know, yeah. Just threaten the people whose names are on the bracelet.
I'd love to see that. And yes, you know, we had Drew on the post show losing his mind last time, you know, and manhandling, Adam Pearce and all of that. Let's get back to that kind of level of, you know, the visceral and away from the bracelet. And I think there's umpteen things they could do. Ideally, yes, that would be, it would be tremendous to get AJ and or both Larry involved as well. But I agree with you too about the physicality. They did get it in, particularly before the bell rang, you know, and the blood, whether that was just good fortune or deliberate, added to it. And it showed, again, this change in philosophy where they zoom in on it, you know, they're not trying to avoid it, even though it wasn't gushing by any stretch, you know. There was a time not that long ago when if that was rerun, it would be shown in black and white, you know, because they just won't show red liquid.
Yeah. Or they would stop the match to make sure the blood was fixed or the cut was fixed before proceeding. Now I get the sense maybe the internal mandate is, if it happens to happen, then we'll take advantage of it, but we might not initiate it. Now, I don't exactly know the source of tonight's blood, whether or not it was intentional or not, but they did take advantage of it once it was seen.
Yeah. And just one more thing. I agree that it was a safe enough match, and I want that for CM Punk because he has shown since his comeback to AEW that through bad fortune or age or a combination of many factors, he's been injured, you know, several times, and ones that have taken him out. You don't want this guy on the shelf, you know. You want him to be able to perform. So I'm happy enough with safe-ish matches as long as they keep this guy in circulation.
We get a little segment in ring from Sebastian Hackel, who is one of the German commentators here. And he's essentially, I guess, the one to deliver the big sort of announcement about the record-breaking, highest-grossing arena show in WWE history is this statistic they are giving us here, which beats Clash at the Castle in Scotland and also beats Backlash France. So we're not counting stadium shows, but highest-grossing arena show in WWE history. And the crowd says, yeah, we paid a lot of money for this.
Exactly.
Yeah. Crowd
yeah,
is just,
we got gouged.
Yeah.
What I'd say about that, and I'm sure you've more to say yourself, Way, Clash at the Castle, there was an awful lot of sticker shock. People were not happy about the pricing. So that's the new normal, it seems, because they were a couple of thousand up. I don't know who, will we go with the WrestleTix number or we go with Cole's number? A couple of thousand, 2,000-3,000 more people at this event than were at Clash at the Castle Scotland, which did have the grossing record before this. So it makes sense. And I think it speaks to high ticket prices more than it does to attendance. I'm sure there's been higher attended arena shows in WWE history. So that's where we're at with ticket pricing. And it's the same with music concerts and stuff. We see it all the time, you know, and I know that you and John had a bit of discussion about that. Whether it was on Ask Away or another show about, you know, what would you be willing to spend to see an artist that you were really, really into. These folks haven't had a PLE, as we must call them these days, or a televised show in 27 years. So they sold it out, you know, so.
Yeah, and I don't anticipate this being even the only record that they'll be breaking maybe even by the end of this year. I mean, it's just sort of like you're hearing record breaking announcements in sort of a lot of forums, and a lot of it I think is just due to inflation. But yeah, also charging for higher ticket prices as well. So congratulations to everybody involved for this record breaking statistic. We go up next to the Terror Twins taking on Dominic and Liv. How do you feel about the Terror Twins nickname? You like it?
Don't love the name, no. And as in a clip from an interview I saw today, they're like, I think it was Dominic in an interview with Glorilla Position, a UK outlet, was saying, I mean, they're 20 years apart. How could they be twins? They're not that far apart, I don't think, in age. But Terror Twins, yeah, it's kind of a goofy name. I think there's something better they could come up with here.
Terror Twins. Well, it's sticking. You know, they're sticking with it, and I think the crowd likes it enough. So maybe I'll get you a Terror Twins a shirt. Maybe we could be built as a Terror Twins with our matching hats next time.
Okay, sure.
All right. So Priest and Dom start things off. Liv and Rhea tag in. Rhea dominates, and this crowd goes wild. Liv retreats. She tags Dom back in as she starts grabbing Priest's leg on the apron to distract, which allows Dom to take control, and Liv continues to cheat on the floor here. The crowd is chanting, "Fuck you, Dom," which I don't think was in German. Rhea tags in. She just unloads her offense on Liv Morgan. Dom is still in the ring. Rhea delivers several short-arm clotheslines, then goes to the corner and repeats the corner head scissors spot that is now a pretty recognizable image from the very beginning of their interactions, when Dom was still a babyface and Rhea was terrorizing him as part of just the Rey Mysterio feud at the very beginning. So that was a pretty cool callback, and the crowd totally recognized it. They broke their DB meter with this.
Oh, spot. Yes. This was by far, I think, the live and loud record for the night.
Yes.
112, I counted.
Wow.
Peaking up. Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. Liv saves Dom from the riptide as she goes for her, a very interesting looking flipping move from a pump handle position. It looked kind of cool here. All four of them now are in the ring as the Terror Twins do a set of stereo moves. We get double thunderclaps and a double razor's edge. JD and Carlito at this point come out, and the distraction allows Liv Morgan to hit a brutal sunset bomb to Rhea Ripley right into the barricades. Finn Balor comes in. He hits a sling blade to Priest. Dom hits the frog splash as Priest kicks out. Back in the ring, Liv Morgan comes in. She tags in, delivers a big suicide dive to Rhea on the floor, and unfortunately, totally overshoots herself on the floor.
Yeah.
JD back in is distracting from a riptide as Liv Morgan hits the Oblivion. Priest takes out the rest of the Judgment Day on the floor, and Priest ends up delivering a big clothesline to Dom onto the tables. The announce tables. Rhea and Liv are left alone in the ring as Rhea delivers the riptide, and Rhea and Priest get the win in 14 minutes and 20 seconds.
I really enjoyed this. I think maybe not quite as much as the crowd, and this was their favorite match, especially if the decibel meter has anything to do with it. I think it really cements Rhea's position as just one of the most popular people in the entire company, all over the world at the moment. You know, I mean, obviously in Australia when they went down there, she got an incredible reaction. But they did the what they normally do with a kind of a put together tag team, in that Priest gets the beginning of his entrance and he comes out to the entranceway. The crowd are pretty happy. But as soon as Liv's, and it is a bit of a banger actually, as soon as Liv's music hits, they go absolutely crazy. They love this woman, you know. So it just cements that. I think also to cut to the chase, really. Let me rewind. There were a couple of little spots I really enjoyed. The double ear boxing by the two of them, the double razor's edge, the crowd reading all of this up. And we got at the end, even though it seemed like, okay, this is a pretty emphatic win, we certainly got the steer from the desk that they've got a semblance of revenge on Judgment Day. And I don't know if this is over. And, you know, it certainly shouldn't be over because this is a very hot program.
Well, it certainly sets up Rhea to immediately challenge Liv Morgan for the championship, I guess, if that wasn't already obvious enough. And it keeps the Terror Twins looking very strong. I mean, coming out of this, I did anticipate these two to win, but I also anticipated Judgment Day to get their heat back. And, of course, they have a lot of TV that they have to fill, so I anticipate the Judgment Day to get one over on top of Rhea and Priest on Raw on Monday.
They were taken care of pretty easily,
yeah,
weren't they? You know, especially when Finn came out, I thought, okay, that changes the tide a little bit here. But no.
The perception as a viewer, I agree, Neil, is that these two alone are enough to take on these five very handily. So they might be appearing almost a little bit too overpowering. But again, you know, there's something there are things they can do on TV to continue to anger them, to continue to build this, because I certainly don't see them extinguishing this anytime soon. It is some of the most successful, loudest reacting segments in all of professional wrestling right now. So anything they could do to heat this back up. Do you think this is a candidate for or any of these matches or any of these programs? Do you think they're candidates for Hell in a Cell?
Interesting. Yes, they could be.
Which?
Liv and Rhea, because I think the title elevates that feud. But Liv needs to get something back first. So there's time. I think I've just been reminded that Bad Blood isn't until October 5th. So there's a fair spell of time between now and then, and to build that program. And again, we've got. As we've already mentioned, if they can get the build correct again, we've got Drew and Punk. Mm-hmm. I don't see another combination here for Hell in a Cell other than the two women.
They can always do Priest versus Dom, but I almost feel like that. I don't know if I see much of a point to that because I think, again, Priest is perceived as such an overpowered person, wrestler compared to Dom. Balor versus Priest, of course, is, I think, their ultimate destination. And maybe that's a singles match, you know, for Bad Blood. So we'll see. I thought the match overall was very successful. You know, again, probably some of the loudest reactions that we've seen the entire night. And there were very loud reactions throughout the entire night. So... let's go up next to the main event here. We got Gunther versus Randy Orton. A big sing-along for at least the chorus to Randy Orton's theme. Not as loud for the rest of the song, so Berlin not studying up on these lyrics as much as some other places have been. But nonetheless, a very loud reaction for the chorus. Gunther comes out. I wouldn't say there was anything special about this entrance. Really no special entrances for anybody on the show, but I think in terms of atmosphere, maybe that was what they wanted to highlight, because he gets a great reception, as you would expect. However, we did get a Ludwig Kaiser appearance here as a huge reaction as he takes the mic from Samantha Irvin here, and he delivers a great intro for Gunther. Any thoughts on any of this fanfare before
the match? Ladies and gentlemen, I love this. I'm with John and you on Ludwig. I think he's great. I like the way he addressed the crowd in German. And then did his usual shtick for getting Gunther over. Although I will say, and it was kind of evident really from the beginning, I think the company and the production team and everybody else probably expected much more of a babyface heel reaction than they got here. This was pretty much a 50-50 from the beginning right through to the end. I mean... I wonder where Randy's, we'll get to it, but, you know, during the match, thumb to the eye and stuff, improvised to try and get a little bit of heat. Mm-hmm. But it was followed by RKO chance. You know, this was a pretty 50-50 crowd. And I do wonder, I don't know the political dynamics between Austria and Germany, but I know that, for example, if, an Irishman was presented as a hometown hero in England, it's not going to really work just because the you know, these are neighbouring countries, same with Wales and England and so on. So perhaps they over-egged the Austria-Germany connection. Who knows?
Well, I mean, we know Gunther Walter has had a long history of just wrestling in Germany and coming up through the scene in Germany. So I would assume like it was enough of a connection that I think like you could justifiably present him as a hometown guy. I think the crowd just happens to really love Randy Orton, you know, like they love him really anywhere. And I agree with you, Neil. I thought the most interesting aspect of this particular match was how they would handle babyface and heel dynamics and let's kind of get into it to see what they did here, because we've got, well, first they just pause in the ring. They give space for this crowd to get their football chants out before they start. Just an incredible atmosphere for this main event here. At one point early on, as they're doing like, you know, just kind of a very slow pace, like series of like headlocks and just kind of like feeling each other out, the crowd starts doing the wave. And this is only notable to me because, well, first of all, Orton paused to acknowledge it. But it also reminded me of that Orton versus Sheamus match from the Raw after WrestleMania 29. Yeah. I don't know if you remember it, Neil.
I do.
John and I were actually present for that particular show. And this was almost like an infamous match where the crowd just completely turned on this match. And they started entertaining themselves with just a series of various chants about just anything. And I'm pretty sure they did the wave then too. But
they did.
It just kind of like, so seeing a Randy Orton match here where the crowd is doing the wave, I think just reminded me of how far Randy Orton and Sheamus have come since being perceived as sort of like born wrestlers of that time to like the fan favorites, like, you know, I would even say highlights, you know, of a show that they are now. They were doing the wave for a very different reason for, you know, on this evening. They weren't bored. They were just like, they were excited. They wanted to get their energy out.
100%. I think a lot of people associate doing the wave with Raw after WrestleMania in the bad old times, I'd say. Let's call it maybe 2016 to 2018. I was something like that, you know, sort of the run-up to the pandemic years, I feel, when it was, you'd have JBL at the beginning of Raw saying, oh, you know, this is when the, you know, where they cheer the bad guys and
Bizarro World,
Bizarro World, all of that stuff. So I think a lot of wrestling fans are programmed to associate the wave with the crowd being bored and wanting to entertain themselves. That isn't what was happening here at all, as you've said. They were just getting into the big match atmosphere in their own way.
Yeah, they're doing the wave, like, again, very much like you would see at a football match, for instance, you know, like just this like incredible like bursting of energy that just needed to be like out there. So it was an incredible atmosphere here. And again, just the sort of like contrast of seeing Randy Orton in this sort of position again, but in a completely different light, I thought was very interesting. So the match begins. They're on the floor as Orton drives Gunther's shoulder into the steps and he starts working over Gunther's arm. So this begins pretty much the match-long story of Orton basically taking the lead as the aggressor in the match, which sets up a very rare Gunther underdog babyface story. Gunther attempts his chops and his chokes, but his arm is messed up as Orton keeps focusing on the arm and attacking it. Gunther mounts a comeback, but the clotheslines aren't looking as powerful because of the injured arm. Orton again regains control. Gunther begins a one-arm comeback as Orton cuts him off with a classic heel eye poke. Orton begins teasing the RKO as Gunther escapes. He begins a comeback with a big splash, sacrificing his own arm for a two count. Gunther can't powerbomb because of the bad arm, so he clotheslines instead with a good arm. We get a big struggle, and Gunther finally delivers his powerbomb for a two count. At this point, Orton avoids another powerbomb attempt and hits an RKO out of nowhere for a very close two count. On the floor, Orton is now selling his back thanks to the powerbomb as he back suplexes Gunther onto the steel steps while also selling his own back. We should note, like, they're moving at a pretty slow pace here, you know, but it doesn't feel boring at all because this crowd is so lively and engaged. Orton has the steps set up next to the announce table as he lifts Gunther up off the steps for an extra high belly-to-back suplex through the table. The referee is acknowledged to have completely stopped the count for this because it was kind of, they might have been up to 60 by this point. Back in, Gunther swats away an RKO and locks in a sleeper hold, and we begin this sort of run up to the finish with this great struggle from Orton and some great crowd reactions during the sleeper hold. Orton breaks out, but Gunther delivers a big chop to his back and locks it back in. Orton falls back to break the sleeper again, but Gunther comes back up, locks the sleeper back in, hammer and anvil elbows, and locks the sleeper in one more time as Randy Orton passes out. I can't remember the last time Orton has tapped, much less passed out from a submission. So I would say a pretty significant way to end the match here as Gunther wins, retaining his championship in 34 minutes and 28 seconds. Your thoughts overall on the match?
Yeah, this was a very WWE match. You're not going to see this in any other promotion. That kind of very deliberate start, the pacing of it. I think the crowd elevated it very, very much. I'm wondering if I'd have got a bit bored with this if it weren't for the crowd getting so into it. Because, as you said, plus 30 minutes is long, and that's bell to bell, isn't it? That doesn't include the entrances, yeah, which in themselves were announcements, which were quite long. But for all of that, I really enjoyed it. And I think it was because of the crowd, because of the tremendous selling, because these two are almost physically made for each other in the ring. Even at the beginning of the match when they're facing off, you sort of think, these two are, you know, they are almost literally made physically for one another here. I think they're great together. But I suppose my nitpick would be, by the end, I was getting a tiny bit antsy. I thought, let's bring it home. Anything over half an hour is a long time, I think, you know, particularly a match of this pace. But the crowd kept it elevated. The two of them did really, really well. And I think this does a lot for Gunther's reign and for the heavyweight title, because Randy's as legit as they get at the moment. And for him to be, you know, submitted by basically passing out. I mean, they called it a tap, but it wasn't a tap. You know,
I didn't see a tap.
No. Charles Robinson lifted the arm and it just flopped. So it does a lot for Gunther too. So, you know, good for Randy. You know, it's another sign of his growth, I suppose, you know.
Yeah, from the starting point that you brought up earlier, which is very different, yeah. I thought it was an excellent match. I might go as far as to say my favorite match of the night, and that might differ for some people. But for me, I thought it was a Randy Orton-paced match in the best way. Okay, like I agree it was long, it was slow paced, but when you have an atmosphere like this one, mm-hmm, the ability to be able to milk every ounce of reaction from a crowd this special, I think is an incredible skill, you know, yeah. And having Randy Orton do like what he's able to do best, which is not necessarily just work slow, but to like, to maximize reaction per spot, per move, per moment, I think is an incredible skill. And I thought this was a tremendous display of like what Randy Orton does best in terms of activity. This was like, I would say, pretty far from like your Gunther style match of just like, you know, like your chop fest with like stiff looking offense. Those who are looking for that for this Gunther match, I think might come out of it disappointed. But I think you can appreciate matches in various ways and in various styles. And to be able to see Gunther work, I would say, a very unique match for him, working as an underdog throughout with an arm injury, showed a different side of Gunther that ultimately resulted in, I think, like a very successful match, you know, relying on selling and pacing and well-placed spots instead. I thought Orton really shined in this closing sleeper like struggle where like he essentially had to kind of, he was the one who was relied upon to sell that struggle, which I thought he did a great job of. Yeah. So overall, I really respected this match. I really actually enjoyed the match. And it's a finish that puts over Gunther about as clean as you can get. Well, yeah. I guess Orton can still hang on to the claim that he never taps. So if there are any sort of future title aspirations, I guess he remains somewhat protected in that way, which is kind of fascinating in that like Orton, yeah, Gunther is put over as well as you can, while Orton can still hold on to some sort of moral victory too.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's not the last we'll see of these two. I mean, their match in the King of the Ring final was great as well, your shoulder up or not, but they used that to their advantage. And in fact, that was another part of the Randy interview, just to rewind, just to sort of call back to that, where he said, you know, that would have been in the past, we would have just forgotten about that. And he said that it was great that we could do a call back to that, and the crowd knew what it was all about. And he's right, you know, that is great, you know, that it gave an excuse for this match. As I say, very WWE, but I don't mean that as an insult at all. Mm. You know, you would never see this match on a AEW pay-per-view.
Yeah.
It's not a bad thing because we want this kind of variety. And as you said, something different from Gunther, who's one of the best wrestlers in the world, I think, at the moment, you know, and His selling in particular was one of the strongest points of this match for the connoisseur, I would say. So I think it was the best wrestling match of the show. I agree with you on that. I was more entertained by the Terror Twins versus Liv and Dom. I thought that was more fun, if you want. Very, very good match.
Yeah, overall, I would say Bash in Berlin for me was a thumbs up show. You had five matches, but like five pretty lengthy matches. And what really kind of made everything work was the atmosphere and the crowd reactions. I mean, even matches that I came in without much anticipation for, like Cody Rhodes versus Kevin Owens, I thought were greatly elevated to the point where I think some would maybe call that, you know, the highlight, one of the big highlights of the show. I thought almost everything exceeded my expectations, including Jade and Bianca versus Fire and Dawn. Mm-hmm. I think Punk and Drew was a good second chapter. Maybe, you know, some sort of clunkiness attached to the stipulation aside, I thought overall it was a good match. Terror Twins versus Liv Morgan and Dom, it just came off incredibly and advanced, you know, their story to a pretty, like, good degree. And the main event, I thought was just tremendous. Now, this is not the show of the year. I don't even know if I would, like, rank it as B show of the year, if you want to, like, maybe rank the WWE sort of international B shows. But I thought it was, like, an overall good pay-per-view. Maybe pacing issues aside that exist with all of these when you're trying to spread out, like, sure, you know, five matches across, like, 2.5 hours. But they were pretty lengthy matches, and I guess, like, I've kind of come up with a way to watch these without having so much lag time either.
Same here, Wayne. I think you and I are both in markets where the WWE Network still exists, so I'm assuming that's how you watch it, that's how I watch it. Therefore, we're somewhat different from the US listeners and viewers who are getting commercials, I believe, when we are getting these kind of...
Depending on the tier that they subscribe to on Peacock.
That's right. They say for subscribers of Peacock, Premier, or whatever it is, they get lookbacks and sort of video packages and so on. So, yeah, but I just work around that. You know, I go and grab a snack, I use the bathroom, something like that. And it can be useful to have those pacing things. You know, it's a 3-hour show, five matches. I like these, and particularly when they're somewhat in my time zone. Yeah. How did you cope with it being kind of at lunchtime on a Saturday? I can understand. I know that you said in the past, morning shows or afternoon shows, great. You know, we can get, you know, we don't have to stay up late. But at the weekend, perhaps.
Yeah,
other things you want to do with the family on a Saturday afternoon, you know.
I actually don't like them as much because, yeah, it kind of takes time away from my family. And, like, believe it or not, I actually tend to be a bit more tired during, like, the afternoon. I don't know if I've just kind of conditioned my body to, like, watch wrestling in the evening, or if I've just, like, got a screwed up sort of mental clock anyway. But I actually, for the start of the show, found myself a little bit more tired. But I definitely kind of jumped back up, you know. But this is just sort of like the norm, I think, we're getting used to now as wrestling fans that are of sort of companies that are at this point catering much more to an international base. You know, certainly if you're a fan of an international sport, like if you're a fan of F1, you're used to kind of waking up at all sorts of times just to kind of follow the sport that you love. Yeah. And I'm fine with it. Like, if it means we get these sort of international crowds and these sort of special atmospheres, and I think, like, I don't know, like a more, like, global feeling product, like, it's kind of exciting. It's kind of exciting to, like, you know, have to wake up or at least, like, experience a show at a different time in a different setting.
Yeah, it takes me back, actually, to, you know, funny, sort of you should mention it, to my next pick for Ask Away, or sorry, Rewind Away, which is out there, and it's the Beast in the East Network special. And I remember watching that live from Sumo Hall at about 8 or 9 a.m. my time, so it would have been the absolute dead of night in Eastern Zone. So I can't imagine too many people caught that live. But it was at that time, which was many years ago at this point, nearly 10 years ago, a real novelty, you know, to get up early and watch a WWE product in a in a strange environment like that.
Yeah.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, it's your chance to travel back to November 2004 as Wei Ting and I review WWE Raw, featuring Trish Stratus and Lita headlining the show. Bruce Lord and Karen Peterson are going to be covering New Japan's Destruction in Kobe event, and MCU Later tackles Agatha All Along. All of that, plus Rewind to SmackDown and Collision Course weekly, and ad-free versions of Rewind to Raw and Dynamite. $6 a month unlocks it all at postwrestlingcafe.com.
At this point, let's go to some feedback. Now, we are doing the show right after this event, so I'm assuming a lot of you guys listening to this right now might be after the fact, so we might not have some of the most feedback. But I also know that there are a lot of international viewers that might be watching us and tuning in who are available at a time that they're not. So I'm doing something that I don't usually do, and that's put the call-in link right into the chat room, into YouTube, so you don't even have to just be a patron if you want to just call in with some of your thoughts. And the first person we want to go to right now is somebody who was in attendance in the Uber Arena in Berlin. He's calling us right from Berlin, I'm assuming, at this moment, and that is Martin Minka. Martin Minka, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Can you hear me good?
I can hear you perfectly fine. Where exactly are you right
Perfect.
Now?
Perfect. I found a relatively quiet place on a busy street, so just to call in here, I'm still in front of the arena. Yeah, maybe you heard the story, Neil. Yesterday, I bumped into an old law legend, Gaurav, from India.
Yes.
He recognized me for my post-wrestling shirt. And today, my buddy, who I wanted to go to the show with, actually got sick. And he got the ticket so he could watch the show, even though he had not planned to watch the show. And we watched it together, actually, and had a great time.
You're kidding. You not only met Gaurav, the legendary Gaurav, you sat with Gaurav for this PLE. That's incredible.
Yeah. Wow. There were even plans for him to sleep at my place because it was not sure if he could return tonight. But he can return tonight in 90 minutes or so. He takes the bus home to Hamburg, where he lives. I hope I can say that.
He didn't try to cheat you out of any kind of competition or anything like that.
Interesting.
The funny thing is that he even got the commemorative chair now because we were on the floor.
What a lovely story. So sorry to interrupt you. We actually have Gaurav actually we have Gaurav actually in the chat room. He left a comment here saying, it was the best crowd that I ever witnessed. KO versus Cody stole the show for sure. I'm an Espresso member, Martin, too. Happy to connect with Pro Wrestling fam again. Shall I make a comeback?
Yes.
The answer is yes, Gaurav. You're welcome anytime.
Think you should, with all his main accounts, I guess.
Thoughts on the show?
No, we went to the GWF and RevPro crossover event before the show. That was really cool too, seeing El Fantasmo, seeing some talent from Impact, from Noah. Michael Oko, unfortunately, was injured, but it was a great show. I think I will be returning much cheaper than WWE. So I think the ticket I paid for today was over 2,000 euro. So, I don't know. I wasn't cheering when they told, hey, you paid so much for your ticket.
2,000 euro is a lot of money.
It is.
Yeah. We're just on a delay, Martin, so I'm just going to keep talking here. But 2,000 euro for, I guess, people, quick conversion is about $2,200 American. So you paid a pretty penny, and therefore Gaurav, I think, owes you at least a beer, I would say.
He did buy me a beer. I think he paid for two beers and some other stuff. So, but that's not a big deal. I wanted to spend time with someone who would appreciate the ticket. So, great stuff.
Highlights of the show, I'm going to let you speak and just kind of feel free,
Neil,
to change it.
About Austria and Germany. So Austrians don't really like Germans, as I've experienced many times, but Germans really do like Austrians. So Germans usually claim Austrians that have made international success for them. Happened with Christoph Waltz, happened with Arnold Schwarzenegger, happens with Gunther now. So we are really happy with him. And also, there's not really a, Ludwig Kaiser is okay, but if we see a big star, Cesaro was the last one probably, who has international success and speaks our language, we can't resist to love them. highlights of the show, definitely the opener, I think, for me. Cody and Kevin Owens. We all expected the turn from Kevin Owens and maybe the rematch at in Atlanta at Bad Blood. Didn't happen yet. Maybe on SmackDown. We'll see.
Mm-hmm. All right. We're going to let you go, Martin, because just to get you to stop hanging out on the street, and also, you know, we are battling a bit of a delay. But thank you so much for wearing our shirt and for calling in. Appreciate it.
All right. Good night, man.
Thanks, see you, Martin. Martin Minka from the streets of Berlin here calling in with a live report. Let's go to one more live report from our forum.postwrestling.com post before we go to our last caller of the evening. This one comes to us from the gentleman named Abbas, who says, greetings and hello from Berlin and Uber Arena. It's been a fun couple of days with SmackDown and this show. Objectively, maybe not the best PLE I've ever watched. Maybe a 7 out of 10 on screen. But subjectively, it was a great first live PLE 10 out of 10 experience. The crowd lived and died for Rhea getting her hands on Dominic. Shout out to my best mate Harry for being there with me, and shout out to the kind Polish father and son who let us share their experiences with them. Also, it should be very easy for them to brag about this being the biggest grossing arena show in their history. Our combo pieces cost 1,200 euro. Let me write that again in letters to avoid any misunderstandings. 1,200 euros, not together for both of us, each a piece, and we didn't even have ringside or ground seats. Wow. SmackDown included two dark matches post-recording. This show didn't have one. We won't count the brawl that a man and a woman had with security guards, though we leave with unforgettable memories, and to quote the late, great Iron Sheik, and besides that, everything was great. There we go. I didn't realize the tickets were that expensive.
No.
It's a record-setting thing, and I suppose this is what you can expect now, you know, for these international shows at least. Like what were they? Were Mania tickets that much?
I don't think so. Martin was on the floor and had the branded seat to take home, so those are going to, be virtually ringside or near enough.
Of course.
Even to 1,200 is seems very expensive to me. I don't know what the average price was. I'll look into it. But
they sold them all. So
they sold them all, and
that's the price.
Yep, and seemingly more so than the prices that people were complaining about in Scotland. So it's only going to go one way, I suppose. Just find another market they haven't been to in nearly 30 years, and the pent up demand is there, I guess.
Yeah, let's go up next to, I'm actually going to go to this, okay, because this is something that's interesting from the press conference that actually occurred before I go to you, our last caller. This is a question that Cody Rhodes received. Here, let me just bring it up on this thing. That Cody Rhodes received at the press conference about Janelle Grant and Vince McMahon, the Vince McMahon documentary. So I haven't listened to this yet. I'm going to be sharing this as part of Brandon Thurston's Twitter, X, I should say, and we'll react to the answer live, you and I, Neil. Here we go.
Janelle Grant's story, do you personally believe what she's saying, and does the locker room believe it? Because the locker room has been awfully silent on this whole issue, you know, the allegations about sex trafficking and rape.
Yeah, I think it's a great question. In terms of, am I going to watch it? Not to sound cheeky by any means, I am deep in a Game of Thrones rewatch, and that is a hell of a lot of commitment. I don't know. I think there's a bit of misinformation in terms of WWE has no involvement in this documentary, as far as I know. I imagine I would get around to seeing it. In terms of the more serious and the meat in your question, in terms of the locker room being quiet or silent, whatever it may be, I don't think that's a matter of belief versus non-belief. I think it's strictly speaking, we want to be doing what we were doing out there, and the focus and attention that it takes, you know, 13,149 people to have a great story and have a great match and do that every single night has left most of us where we're finding the information out just as you are. And that includes the resolution of this information in terms of what happened, how it happened, and how justice comes about, whatever it may be. But I wouldn't look at it as an active attempt from the locker room to be silent in the attempt. We just are doing what we do day to day, WWE business. I'm sorry?
Do you believe Danielle Grand?
Oh, I don't know enough about the information to give you a good enough answer there. I'm sorry.
All right, one last question. We'll head to...
So that was Cody Rhodes at the Bash at Berlin post-show press conference answering a question about the Janelle Grant allegations in the Vince McMahon documentary. I believe the question from the reporter, which I'm sorry I didn't get the name of, but thank you, reporter, for asking that question so that we can have this discussion. I believe it was something to the effect of the locker room has been kind of silent on this, and does that reflect in any way on... how much do the performers themselves believe in the accusations? What did you think about Cody Rhodes' answer, Neil?
I think good on the reporter for asking the questions. These questions should still be asked. There's an open debate to be had about whether it should be the talent or whether it should be the executives of this company who are part of the lawsuit. People keep forgetting that this is not just Grant v. McMahon. It is a lawsuit against Vince McMahon, John Laurinaitis, and the company that owed her a duty of care. So I think that's important to emphasize at the get-go here. And I would not take huge issue with someone who said this is not Cody Rhodes' question to answer. Mm-hmm. It's really an executive's question to answer, and the executive that we get put in front of us is Triple H. And last time he was asked about it, he said, "I can't talk about legal stuff." I think that more or less his exact words.
We should also note, but sorry to cut you off. Paul Levesque was not present at the press conference because, according to this is a tweet from WrestleTalk. Cody Rhodes took over Triple H's press conference duties of reading the records and stats as Triple H is going to see his daughter before she leaves for college. So Paul Levesque not present at this press conference
because Paul Levesque was in what seemed like a pre-taped segment during the pre-show. So perhaps that was done and before he even, maybe he's not even in Berlin at the moment. Mm. So Cody took on his role. Okay, I would like to know a little more about, you know, that. But as I say, I wouldn't take issue too much with somebody who would argue that that's not responsibility of your champion, of one of your talent, to answer the question. But that said... you know, a great credit to Cody Rhodes for giving a thoughtful and I think honest and I think probably as far as he could go answer to that question. Slight discomfort at the very end where he's being asked, do you believe her? You know, it's hard to put yourself in that spot, you know, because I know my own personal view on these matters in general, at my starting point at least, when accusations are made. But I think he answered the question well and he deserves a great deal of credit for that. He could have dodged it. He could have said it's an ongoing legal matter. You know, Cody is clever enough. He's a smart guy. He's smart enough to have thought, you know, I'm not going to go there, and I could come up with an answer why it's an ongoing legal matter, and it's not really for me to answer that question. So I give him great credit.
Yeah. Cody has always impressed me in his ability to deal with the media, and that just happened to continue, you know, with an answer like this. Hard to say, like, how much credit we should be giving somebody for answers to, like, these sort of questions, because I feel like an answer like this should be the baseline. like this should be what we should be expecting from everybody, and to just simply have like a coherent, thoughtful, still substantial answer without necessarily like giving too much information. I think that should just be like, that should be the norm, right? So I guess credit to Cody Rhodes for delivering a what felt like a very normal answer, rather than like, you know, just shying away from the topic, showing that he's actually thinking about it and before speaking, and that he's not just dismissing it because of the sort of like, I don't know, scariness in the taboo nature of the topic. Talk to me about it like a real human being. And I thought he did a good job of conveying his actual like genuine reactions to it. We don't know enough. We are the wrestlers, and we want to focus on the performance, and we're reacting to the news in real time, just as all of you are. I think that's a perfectly substantial enough, like believable enough, and also like satisfying enough answer that you could expect from, you know, an active member of the roster. Not to say Paul Levesque can maybe get away with that same excuse, but I think even in his position, there's a lot more he could say. You know, even along similar lines, we don't know enough when we're reacting to all of this at the same time as you.
Exactly.
That we've never had from him. You know, in fact, it's been a lot more dismissive. Might come with a bit of a snarky comment at the people asking the question at the same time. Let's treat this like a dialogue, you know, between the public, who the press is supposed to represent, and the performers, and talk to us like you would talk to somebody like that you respected. You know, that's I think what we're all just looking for in these sort of discussions.
Absolutely, there's nothing whatsoever that's controversial in what Cody said. As you said, it's kind of a baseline for a human response to a question like that, where you know that he has some knowledge of the events, so playing completely dumb would be absolutely inauthentic. My issue with Triple H on this matter is that time and again he's fallen short of where he ought to be, in the sense that, yes, he's his ballpark, his area is creative. He's their chief creative officer, but he's also a high-ranking executive in the company that is named in the lawsuit. And I think he has owed more to not just fans, but, and you know, whoever wants to ask that question, because it's a very valid question to ask. And, you know, he's gone from, I haven't read it, to I can't talk about legal stuff, you know. And I think apart from that, the most recent official statement that I can think of is when it's Chris LaGentle, isn't it? Chris is his first name. Mm-hmm. Was interviewed fairly recently. He gave credit to John and to Brandon. Ironically, during a week when John was not admitted to the press conference, but people can decide whether that's, you know, just cock up or conspiracy. But anyway, he said, when there are things we can say, we will say them, and if when there are things that we can't comment on, we won't. We feel we've been as open as we can, or something like that. He said a little more than we've heard from Paul Levesque. But I think, at the risk of repeating myself, this company is named in the lawsuit. The lawsuit, yes, has been paused, but there is definitely more that they and their spokespeople could say. And I don't think it's for the talent, particularly the junior talent. Cody has a lot of leeway. He's obviously being trusted here, you know, and to more or less take the spot of Triple H in this press conference, which I haven't seen. Neither of us have seen it, because we've been doing this podcast, and I haven't seen any of the reaction on social media yet either. But I can imagine that that reporter is getting an incredible amount of grief as we speak. I've no doubt.
Yes, they are. I'm doing a quick look through right now, and the reaction is about what you'd expect. But yeah, that would seem to be the most newsworthy piece out of the post press conference. If there are any other news pieces coming out of it, do go to postwrestling.com, where Andrew Thompson Rest in peace, Andrew Barton, Andrew Thompson, the Yik is manning all the updates on the site. So thank you, Andrew. Let's go lastly here to our last piece of feedback. And all the way from Berlin, we go to New Jersey. Brandon, are you there? Thank you for waiting on hold.
Can you hear me?
No, yes, we can.
Oh, yeah. Beautiful. Props to that reporter for keeping that story in the ether alive, answering the hard question. It's good to keep that story alive and keep peppering these questions out there, because it's an important story, especially if they got a documentary coming out with the star. I mean, the, well, I don't want to call him the star. The guy that's involved in the scandal.
It's interesting too, but that part of his answer was kind of interesting too, Brandon, wasn't it? Not as consequential, but the fact that, you know, he's distancing the company from that documentary already. Mm. And even saying, you know, I mightn't have time to watch it because of Game of Thrones, which is, you know, whatever. But I know that's not the main part of his answer, but you're getting from Cody a kind of a, don't, you know, WWE is, you know, kind of stepping back from that documentary, which maybe gives us some indication of what it might be.
So,
but sorry, that's not what you called in for.
No, it's good. So Vince is probably not going to get final cut of that that documentary, huh?
I don't believe he will. Unless it's contractually stated that he does, but I don't think that's the case. I don't have the exact information on that, but I don't think that's the case.
Yeah, I'm curious about this. How this whole WWE. I know they're not involved in the doc now, but. Originally they were they? I don't.
Yes.
Yes. I'm
at
shocked.
Minimum.
Go ahead.
At Yo. Minimum, cooperating, because there's quite a lot of interview footage pre the lawsuit that's going to be in this.
I'm interested how things what change, and you know, Bill Simmons is a very important person in documentaries and stuff like that, with 30 for 30 and whatnot. And I'm just curious, like, how his spin is going to be on this documentary as well. But
so this is from Awful Announcing, but this is from a Bill Simmons interview from October of 2023. And at that point, Bill Simmons did say that Vince does not have final cut on the film. Netflix does.
Mm. So. Interesting. Neil, shout out to you at All In. Great question you asked. And one thing, I'll let you guys go because it's getting late for Neil, because you know, he's in Northern Ireland, you know, and whatnot.
Is it prime time, Brandon? Take your
time. Oh, it is prime time. I don't forgive me for my time differences. Yeah, I love the show. The main event was cool. It's a typical Randy Orton match, right? He and the way they played in the crowd for the match was great too. It reminded me of Billy Gunn versus Swerve at Toronto that one time that we all went to. I love that. I love that match when I was there live and incoherently inebriated, but with John and the gang. But the whole Kevin Owens deal is, he said that he didn't sign his contract, so his extension. So the way, I don't know, people are saying, like, you know, the way this feud ended. I wonder what his future is post. This match, is he going to go to another planet?
Another planet? What do you mean?
Like another organization, another territory, whatever. I don't know, but I know he's got friends in other places, but yeah, I'm just curious about that. And one more thing, Wei, that the button up you're wearing, is it part of the pack at Chop Dash Tees? Is it a post-wrestling dress shirt? I would love a post-wrestling dress shirt like that.
A post-wrestling dress shirt? I don't think it's part of this. I don't think we sell this one. I believe this is from Uniqlo. So you have to go to that website to get that.
So post-wrestling doesn't have nightclub attire, like Jenko jeans or True Religion bouncer jeans or stuff like that.
Well, you could wear anything to a nightclub you want.
I remember one time a bouncer was wearing True Religion jeans at the Casbah, the Trump Taj Mahal, and he had a... he had a blazer on with an Under Armour an Under Armour shirt and dress slacks and
wow.
And he was protecting Rico Rodriguez that night. My friend went for an autograph to Rico, and Rico walked away from him. It was a sad night. That was the night we went to the IFL. And, but I digress. I love you guys. I love the Wellness Policy. I stand for Neil and his fedora press hats. Way, you're the man. I appreciate you, Way.
Okay, thank you, Brandon. I appreciate you too. Yes,
all love,
as always.
All love from New Jersey, man. Love is love. Rest in peace, Fat Man Scoop, by the way.
Yes, R.I.P. Thank you very much, Brandon. As
Johnny
always,
Gaudreau. Rest in peace to Johnny Gaudreau too. All right, guys. I love you guys.
Oh yes, of course.
Love you guys.
Okay, thank you, Brandon. Always lovely to hear from Mr. New Jersey himself.
I can't see Kevin leaving the territory. I think it was always his ambition to be with WWE. Perhaps, you know, the fact that there are two companies now offering good wages, we see it with Becky. I don't think she's leaving either. Who knows?
I don't know. I'm kind of a bit open-minded for this one. I know the immediate reaction for a lot of people is that this is just negotiation from Owens every few years and that he's ultimately going to stay with the WWE. But I can see his ambition still being like, you know, being a maybe legitimate WWE champion or headlining a WrestleMania in a match that he, you know, is I guess more so responsible for than either Sami Zayn or Stone Cold Steve Austin. Mm-hmm. I could see that being his ultimate ambition. I can also see him thinking that the way to get to that is by going outside of the company and having a run somewhere else first before returning as a bigger name. Because him staying in the company at the moment, he's definitely like reached sort of a bit of a stagnation point, mm-hmm. In terms of evolution of character. Like he's at a good spot, but I don't see him necessarily getting that much higher. So I actually think AEW would be a good option for him just to kind of like hopefully advance to a different level of his career. But I think even at this point, that's a big gamble just because AEW is so loaded and how much room is there even for Kevin Owens to grow, you know, or could he end up being like another Miro or Andrade or Malakai Black that just arguably have not really advanced their careers. Mm-hmm. But I at least like the possibility is there. And ultimately, of course, so much of it comes down to money. You know, who's willing to match what offers? How ridiculous are these amounts going to get? No, I don't want to say ridiculous, but fair, I should even say, these amounts are going to get. He's an interesting name to keep watching for the next few months. Neil, you're also a very interesting name that we have enjoyed watching for these few months. You've had a very busy week.
The Pollock-esque segue there.
Oh, Wayne. Man. Well, it's the truth, Neil. You've had a very busy week between, you know, going over to Wembley to cover All In For Us, to appearing on Brandon Thurston and John Pollock's show, to doing this show, of course, with everything else that you do as well. So thank you very much, Neil, for joining us here.
Always a pleasure, Way. Always. And I'm looking forward to the two of us getting together with Jordan for the next Wellness Policy. That will not be too far away. You know, 2 weeks on Tuesday, I think. Something like that.
Already. Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tune in for that. You know, every single month, Jordan, Neil, and I do a show called The Wellness Policy where we just kind of talk about anything but wrestling, to be honest with you. Wrestling might come up, but like these are more topics about just general well-being and really just general interest. So tune in right here at youtube.com/postwrestling. Thank you to everybody watching us live right now. Thank you certainly to Martin Minka for calling in and, you know, giving us some live reporting over from Berlin. And if you're listening to this right now, please leave us a nice review on whatever platform you're listening us to, whether it be audio or video on YouTube. So till next time, find him at Neil Flanagan. I am at Way0937, and we'll talk to you guys later. Bye-bye.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.